I'm Rick Gambling. This is NHPR News at 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. With back-to-school sales already being advertised, teachers nationwide are gearing up for a new academic year, and in about 40 states, also for new standards known as the Common Core. That's the case in the Granite State, which signed on to Common Core 4 years ago, although some districts here have chosen to walk their own path. Just a few weeks ago, for example, the Manchester School Board took another step toward adopting its own education standards after criticism erupted over Common Core. In most communities, however, districts are on board with the new approach. The final big phase happens this spring, when students will take the so-called Smarter Balanced test, aligned with the new standards. And that has a lot of teachers nervous. Many don't feel they have the training or resources yet to implement Common Core, never mind test kids based upon it. Today in The Exchange, what's in store for Common Core in New Hampshire and nationally? Let's hear from you. Have you seen these new standards affecting your local schools yet? What do you hope happens next? Give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Our guests are Sam Evans-Brown, education reporter for us here at NHPR. Sam, thanks for taking time out.
Thank you, Laura.
Also with us, Andrew Ujifusa. He's a reporter with Education Week, a national publication. He joins us from the D.C. area. Andrew, welcome. Thanks for your time.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
And with us in studio, Heather Gage with New Hampshire's Department of Education, where she is director of the Division of Educational Improvement. And Heather, welcome back. Good to see you.
Great to see you, Laura. Thank you.
Well, and I want to start with you, Andrew. If we could just go back to basics for a moment. What was the push that led more than 40 states to say, yep, we need these new standards called Common Core?
So I think you can actually trace this back at least a couple of decades in terms of the push among governors and other education officials for higher standards. But the most recent push behind Common Core was about really began about half a dozen years ago, really got going when the National Governors Association and Council of Chief State School Officers sort of oversaw the creation of Common Core. And I think the general consensus was that there was too much variation in terms of the quality and rigor of states' content standards. And there was also a consensus that states needed to have a more uniform approach to standards as well as higher standards in order to improve public schools and student performance in general across the country. So I think that's sort of the basic history there, and most states ended up adopting the Common Core in 2010.
And how does this relate to No Child Left Behind? When you say, you know, national, state, reform, standards, that's what comes to a lot of people's minds still.
I think so. And I think one of the things that No Child Left Behind, which was approved in 2002, one of the things it didn't do was ensure sort of a uniformity again between states in terms of what kind of content standards they have. And so the quality of your standards can relate to your performance on annual state assessments, which is really the perhaps the biggest legacy or the biggest piece of No Child Left Behind are these annual tests in grades 3 through 8 and in high school in terms of measuring student performance. And that's where the standards could have sort of the biggest impact in terms of what the public sees.
So the national governors, Andrew, said, look, there's too much variation still, even with No Child Left Behind, there's too much variation among what kids in Arkansas versus New Hampshire versus Colorado have to learn. So they said, hey, let's have a standard that everybody has to follow, and then we'll have some uniformity at least across state lines.
I think that was a big part of it, as well as trying to ensure that the standards that most states have are more rigorous. There was also support from the business community that said, if we have more rigorous standards, then our students will be better prepared for both college and careers. That's the point that not everybody agrees with, but certainly from leading education officials and governors as well as the business community, that's been one of the driving forces behind the Common Core.
Along with, speaking of business and driving forces, Bill Gates, right? I mean, didn't he fund some of this effort, Andrew?
Yes, he has been involved, and he's become sort of the bête noire, perhaps, of people who are skeptical of the Common Core. And I think that there were people who we aren't very familiar with who worked on sort of the technical side of actually developing the Common Core. It's not as if Bill Gates sat in a room and thought of the Common Core himself, you know, each and every standard. He has been very supportive, and he has donated quite a bit of time, energy, and money to efforts that sort of support implementation and support of the Common Core. I think it is debatable to what extent the Common Core is sort of a creature of Bill Gates, and is, his involvement has certainly become very controversial.
So Bill Gates isn't sitting there determining what books my fifth grader is going to read next year?
No, I don't think that's a fair statement.
I want to invite our listeners to join us, and then we have a lot more to cover in terms of how this has been rolling out in New Hampshire and nationwide. The exchange number for you to join us with your questions and comments about Common Core, the new education standards that you've probably been hearing about, 1-800-892-6477, email exchange at nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. And Sam Evans Brown, one education official involved in this from Washington State, was quoted as saying, "It's a big shift in pedagogy. It's a big shift in content." How big, Sam, and in what way?
I think that to say that is that it's a big shift is it's really going to depend a lot in sort of a school by school, classroom by classroom basis.
Depending on what you're doing already.
Exactly. And I think there are a lot of teachers and a lot of classrooms in which this is actually not going to be a big shift, because you can look back at the sort of the history of standards and see that there are other standards that have been developed prior to the Common Core that the Common Core is sort of based on. For instance, in math, there were standards that were adopted by the National Councils of Teachers of Mathematics that were largely similar to the Common Core that many math teachers have been adopting voluntarily long before the Common Core came into play. So if you're in a classroom like that, things aren't going to change a whole lot. However, if you're in a state that had not very rigorous standards, you were adhering solely to the state standards and not to one of these national set of voluntary guidelines that was already bouncing around out there, you could see a large shift. But I think it's really going to depend a lot. I don't think that you'll see teachers reinventing themselves every year when they come to the classroom based on whatever professional development they've had over the summer. So teachers are people just like everyone else. And so I just don't think you'll see massive shifts in every classroom. I think mostly students, you know, when you go out and talk to students, a lot of them, only if a teacher's been really hammering on talking about the Common Core, have they even heard of this. Students don't tend to notice these shifts. They happen pretty gradually.
You know, one thing that Common Core officials, and I use that term broadly, Sam, often stress, and I'd love for you to clarify this for us. They say these are standards. They're not curricula. They're standards. Why is that so important?
Well, it's important because, because the curricula is how these standards actually become reality in the classroom. And B is because the development of the curricula is how teachers exercise control over the content in their classroom. So you can say, okay, students need to know the Pythagorean theorem and need to know what you can do with it, but exactly how you teach that to them can vary widely from classroom to classroom. And while there are sort of model curricula that are being developed by education companies like Pearson, which is another bête noire for education skeptics, there's no one saying you have to adopt this curriculum. They're simply out there, and yes, that may influence how teaching happens because these types of tools are widely adopted, but that doesn't, there's no one saying on a national basis, here's the curriculum you have to adopt. No one's handing out textbooks to every teacher in the nation.
So here's what you need to know, but it's up to the teachers and the students, given their strengths and weaknesses and so forth, how you get there.
Exactly right.
Yeah. So what about that comment, Heather Gage? It's a big shift. It's in both in terms of content and in pedagogy. It sounds like from what we're hearing from Sam, maybe yes, maybe no.
Absolutely, Laura. The great thing about, just speaking from New Hampshire perspective, the great thing about being in this state is that for several years now, we've been involved in what we call competency-based education, personalized learning. So teachers around this wonderful state have been engaged in and articulating what it means to have a child in their classroom with a personalized learning approach. So what does that student need in order to get to a higher level of success in their classroom? So you also may hear it called personalized learning. So those critical components of the Common Core around making sure that kids can problem solve and be critical thinkers and those kinds of things, a lot of that work has been done in New Hampshire for several years now. And so this is a next step, you know, in making sure that we're combining, taking the whole system approach of standards, competencies, and personalized learning, instruction in the classroom, and like you said earlier, with the assessment piece and measures of student achievement later on.
So how much of a change is it going to be for students and teachers here in New Hampshire? Sounds like maybe not that much?
Well, I think Sam's right. I think it depends on the classroom. I think it depends on how far that particular teacher or the administration at the school district has gone on this. You know, one thing to keep in mind is we're actually in year 5 of implementation in our state. Some school districts have been doing it for that long. Most have been probably around the 3 to 4 year range that they've been implementing Common Core. So this isn't something that's really new to them. So going into this new school year, a lot of the expectations around the new standards in math and English language arts have been articulated to parents and students and certainly teachers around the state.
Well, in just a moment after our break, I do want to get a little bit more into the classroom level with you folks and, you know, relating to what you said, Heather, what this means for the English class, for the math class. What does it mean in terms of what you write and what you read and the type of analysis you have to do? But I'd love your thoughts very quickly, too, on the idea that this is curriculum, not standards, Heather.
I couldn't agree more. That it's what Sam described is perfect. The difference between standards and curriculum, standards are what we want students to know and be able to do. And I can later on in the show, we can talk about some specifics in that area. And curriculum is how the teacher is going to implement those standards so that kids master the content.
All right. Again, the exchange number is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter. When we come back, we'll talk more at the classroom level, some concrete examples of what Common Core might mean in your local schools. We'll talk about that and take your emails, exchange@nhpr.org, calls 1-800-892-6477. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter as well. We'll be right back. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, 919. Good morning. If you don't want to fix the latest thing to break down in your vehicle, well, maybe it's time for you to donate it to NHPR. It's as easy as becoming a member. All you have to do is make a phone call. We'll fill out the paperwork and arrange for the pickup and sale of your vehicle. Just call 1-877-393-NHPR to get things started or go online to nhpr.org. Mostly cloudy today, chance of showers this morning, partly sunny, chance of showers and thunderstorms this afternoon, with highs today upper 70s to around 80 degrees. Support for NHPR comes from you, our listeners, and support also comes to us from Tory Hill Author Series, presenting Bill Littlefield's of NPR's Only a Game, Saturday, August 9th at 7 p.m., Warner Town Hall. Details at warnerhistorical.org. And the Country Carriage at Mill Falls Marketplace on Meredith Bay, featuring distinctive country gifts, casual clothing, a baby boutique, and Vera Bradley's back-to-school collection. CountryCarriage.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at the new educational standards called Common Core and what they'll mean for our classrooms here in the Granite State and nationally. 1-800-892-6477 is the number for you to join us. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Our guests are Sam Evans-Brown, education reporter for us here at NHPR, Andrew Ujifusa, he covers state education policy for Education Week, a national publication, and Heather Gage, director of the Division of Educational Improvement for the New Hampshire Department of Education. One more time, that number, 1-800-892-6477. And all of you, lots of listeners jumping in already, but Andrew, I did want to go back to you for just a moment. Okay, so can you give us a concrete example of what this might mean at the classroom level, given that, as all of you have spelled out, it's not curricula, it's a standard. So can we even say that this means this and not that at the individual classroom level?
Well, I think that one of the general points of the Common Core is that it's asking teachers to get students to be able to demonstrate how they're thinking. And it sounds like an abstract concept, but, you know, in math, for example, math problems aligned to the Common Core, they ask students not just what's the answer, but to be able to demonstrate, okay, what concepts do you understand, and how can you demonstrate your work as you arrive at that answer? So I think that's something where, again, as your other two guests mentioned, it might be a big shift for some teachers in classrooms to be able to get students to focus on the process, not just a final answer or a finished product. For some classrooms, it may not be a big shift, but I think that's something where even teachers who are supportive of the Common Core can find that to be a real challenge in terms of implementing it in their classroom.
So in math, Andrew, it isn't just give me the answer. It's write out, however long it takes you, how you arrived at that answer, the process by which you arrived at that.
Yes, I think that's a fair way to put it. And of course, most math teachers would say that they want their students to be able to demonstrate how they arrived at an answer. I think the promise of Common Core, at least, is that because not just of what's in the standards, but the sequence that they're in and the way that they try to ensure that students master certain concepts, I think the promise of the Common Core is that they'll give teachers the ability to do that, to ensure that students grasp those concepts and don't just write a couple of numbers down on a piece of paper and say, there, that's it, I've done it, we can move
cross
on.
Cross their fingers. And actually, I see that happening already with my own kids' homework, that they have to, it's not enough to give the answer, they have to write it out, how they got there. Sam, go ahead.
So just really quickly, there are, even more concretely, there are some standards that have moved grade levels or moved classes. And that's if you talk to actual teachers, that's where a lot of them have actual bones of contention, as they disagree at the grade or classes that certain concepts are being introduced. And without really getting into it, you can basically just say, for example, there are some ideas that used to be in pre-calculus that are now in Algebra 2, and certain ideas that used to be in Algebra 2 that are now in Algebra 1. So it's basically just like a ratcheting up, making things a little bit harder at a lot of classes and a lot of grade levels. And you know,
is that a good idea, Sam?
Well, I think that a lot of educational experts who say that we aren't attaining at the level we should be say we need to ratchet up. And so it depends who you ask, but certainly the designers of the Common Core thought so.
Okay, so the idea being maybe we're not pushing them hard enough, and a lot of them could do Algebra 1 at an earlier level, but we're not asking. Let's ask.
Right.
And see how it goes. One more specific question, then I do want to bring our listeners into this. And to you, Heather, we hear a lot of concern on the English side about the downgrading of fiction in favor of technical manuals. And we're going to talk with a Manchester English teacher a little bit later about this. But what about that, Heather? People in the field of English and literature and writing are kind of concerned.
Sure. And I think a lot of it is based on a misunderstanding of what the standards are around the English language arts component. So there certainly is a much greater push and expectation around evidence-based literacy and reading and providing that context around there. But to say that we have now lessened our approach on Shakespeare and poetry and those kinds of things is actually not accurate.
Because I've heard that in a lot of places.
Absolutely. In fact, I just heard a teacher talk at a presentation a few weeks ago that brought his stack of books, you know, the great classics that we've all read in school, and new classics that you may not have heard of. Those are still being taught in school. And what's changed is instead of teachers, or in addition, in some cases, for teachers asking the question of how did that make you feel, it's asking the question, show me evidence in what you've just read that would support your argument in this particular way. So it's making sure that kids can provide evidence, because when we go into employment, our employers aren't asking us what how we feel about something, they want evidence to be able to back up whatever particular argument that we're making at the time.
So still reading fiction, the classics, and whatever else, but approaching it differently, saying pull out evidence from what you've just read instead of how does this make you feel?
Right. And it's also helping all teachers across all content areas in that reading realm. So it's not just the reading teacher's responsibility anymore to look at how students are reading, but across the curriculum as well.
Okay, a lot more questions for all of you. Did you want to jump in real quickly there, Sam?
Yeah, real quickly, just the writers of the Common Core and sort of defenders of the Common Core have said that it's not that they're asking for less fiction to be read, just that more nonfiction should be read, especially in other classes, so that as a percentage, fiction will drop. You're still reading the same number of fiction books
in your English classes.
In your English classes, but you're also reading nonfiction in other classes, and so you're just reading more in general. The question is, again, implementation. To what degree will there be pushes on a school-by-school basis that teachers will feel pressured to drop books that they had in the past? And you know, you hear sort of these horror stories of people saying that they're going to have to read air conditioning repair manuals and things like that. But
instead of Shakespeare, right?
And I think that really goes to the core of the issue, which is education, especially in New Hampshire, is a locally controlled enterprise. And so how this is implemented is going to have wide variation.
Okay, well, speaking of locally controlled, I've got an email here from Jack who says the powers of the federal government are delegated there too in the Constitution of the United States, with those not granted, quote, reserved to the state respectively or to the people. Jack says, we the people have, by my count, authorized 4 roles for the federal government in education, 0, zilch, nada, and none. Among the last things, Jack says, we need is the Congress of the United States acting as 535 members of a national school board. Jack, thank you very much for the email. Andrew, we should talk about this. There's a feeling that this is yet another federal top-down mandate being imposed on us locally.
So this is a very large can of worms with respect to the Common Core. Perhaps the simplest way to put it is that the federal government, the Obama administration, likes the Common Core, although they've been much less vocal about it as of late. The federal government, not explicitly, but the general understanding in states was that the federal government incentivized states to adopt the Common Core when they were competing for race to the top grants. These were K-12 grants that the department was providing to states back in 2010. This was obviously a time when state education budgets and state fiscal climates in general were very poor, and many states were eager to shore up their budgets through these grants. So there was an incentivation, there was incentivizing going on by the federal government, and there were also waivers from the federal No Child Left Behind Act, federal ed law, to adopt high standards. So again, not explicitly stated that the Common Core would have to be adopted by states, but there was an incentive for states to have Common Core in place, in practice, to get a waiver from parts of federal education law. And in addition, I should point out that the federal government did not write the standards.
Yeah.
So that's the lay of the land as far as that goes.
Well, and Jack's point is well taken. It's a good question. A lot of people do think that this is yet another federal initiative, like No Child Left Behind. You're saying, Andrew, that there were incentives from the feds, but that these were written by governors and state education, or approved by governors and state education leaders at the state level. What do you think? Some people have said, you know, the Obama administration just should have let well enough alone. It shouldn't have even gotten involved. And that way, these could have remained sort of a pure state-based initiative. What do you think about that criticism, Andrew?
Well, it's an interesting counterfactual. I think it's possible that that scenario could have been more helpful for the long-term sort of political prognosis of the Common Core. On the other hand, it's difficult to say also how many states would have adopted the Common Core had it not been an implicit, unspoken incentive in Race to the Top, for example. I suspect that perhaps some states would have adopted it, but perhaps not as many. But again, it's difficult to say. And as I said before, I do think the federal government, people like Secretary of Education Arne Duncan, have toned down their sort of full-throated support of the Common Core. That Mr. Duncan now says, for example, that he supports high standards as a general matter instead of explicitly saying the Common Core is what I want,
okay.
is what I support. So it's an interesting question, and we will never know the answer.
Jack, thanks for the email. The email address is exchange@nhpr.org. The phone number, 1-800-892-6477. And Ben is joining us from where? Hi, Ben. Go ahead. You're on the Exchange.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I really appreciate it. I have a couple of comments and then a question, if I might. I have a son that's about to go into fourth grade and a daughter about to go into eighth grade. The Common Core that was introduced at the time that my kids were getting into it was immediate, and it was overwhelming and confusing for everybody involved, including the school. The testing went crazy, and when they took their kneecap testing, there was some confusion as to whether the testing was for the Common Core standards or whether it was for the kneecap standards. And as a result, the teachers were scrambling quite a bit to make sure that they covered everything that they had to do with the state standards in addition to the Common Core standards. And my question is, one of your guests earlier, and I forget which one, I apologize, stated that it wasn't necessarily a curriculum-based standard. It was a performance-based standard. But yet the curriculum across, from what I can see, is particularly in math, pretty standardized among the state, and they're doing problems that I have a college degree, and I can't even figure out how to help my kids with that.
Yeah. I think that's a common complaint, Ben, and has been for a while. They seem to keep changing the way you're supposed to do math every 10 years or so. So overall, Ben, what do you think? Is this a net positive or a net negative for your kids and your schools?
Well, it's kind of a mixed bag, because I appreciate that we've recognized that the students need higher standards. A high school degree nowadays doesn't do anything for you. When you get your diploma, it doesn't mean as much as it did 25, 30 years ago.
Sure.
And now you need a college degree just to get basic jobs. And I agree that the standard needs to be higher for the United States to compete globally. But the implementation, I think, was too rushed, too confusing, and because there wasn't a set way of doing it, it made a mess of the program.
Well, thanks a lot for calling in. And I think to you, Heather, I've heard this in other quarters as well, that, you know, the implementation, the transition has been very different from district to district. Some districts have basically flipped the switch and said, okay, everybody, Common Core. Others have been more gradual. What do you think about Ben's call? And Ben, thank you for joining us.
Well, Ben, I would actually love to have some more conversation with you if you want to give me a call at the department. But, you know, it's absolutely true, Laura. There are a variety of different ways that this has been implemented across the country as well as within our state. The great thing about New Hampshire is we do have a value on local governance. And so even though the state has adopted the Common Core state standards in mathematics and ELA, that how the districts use those standards to either inform their own standards or to adopt it full throttle, like you just mentioned, was completely in their control. And when we talk about the difference between standards and curriculum, again, the standards are just what we want students to know and be able to do. They can look in the past have looked different from state to state, but in New Hampshire, we've adopted these particular ones. The implementation, though, is a really great point, Ben. And the reason why I say that is we have received a lot of comments and concerns from educators about how we implement with fidelity, if you will, to make sure that we're implementing the standards in a way that all students can learn. The one thing that the standards, if you look at the actual document, clearly articulates is that the standards aren't everything that we want students to know and be able to do in all content areas, of course, but they also don't prescribe a way of teaching. For example, a teacher told me just yesterday, a math teacher, I teach fractions, but there's 100 ways for me to teach a particular concept within fractions. And so when we're talking about curriculum, that's what we're talking about there. But Ben, your concern with actually the rush of implementation. Those are conversations that we can have collectively as a state, but also as your district, about how we can help support your children in that area.
Although there
really
is some
important.
Pressure to get this going, right, Sam? I mean, the test, the smarter, balanced test, which sounds like a butter substitute that they sell at the grocery store, that's coming spring of next year. So there is some pressure to move.
That's exactly what I want to talk about. Yes. So and Ben makes an interesting point, which is up until last year, students were being assessed on the NECAP, the New England Common Assessment P program, I think it is. Anyway, but the standards had not fully transitioned yet. So there's this question: do you teach the old New Hampshire standards that the NECAP is based on, or you know that written to, and or do you teach the Common Core standards that you should be ideally gradually transitioning to, and that this coming spring they're going to be tested on then? And so there is this confusion. We're doing this slow, gradual transition in some schools, but they're still being tested on the old standards. But this coming spring they'll be assessed with the smarter balance, and that issue will be gone.
All right. Well, let's go back to our listeners. And again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Joining us from Bedford is Anne-Marie. Hi, Anne-Marie. Thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Hi, Laura. Just to clarify, this is Anne-Marie Banfield with Cornerstone Action. And we've been actually leading the fight against Common Core in New Hampshire. But I wanted to bring up a couple points that have been discussed on your show this morning. And the first is that the teachers will have creativity in the classroom, local control. What we're seeing nationwide, and I think what we're going to see more and more in New Hampshire once the testing starts, is that's going to be diminished. And the reason I say that is because teachers are now being evaluated based on their students' performance on the test. And we're seeing it in Manchester, for instance. They are now tying a teacher's evaluation to the performance of the students. And that's what's driving out the creativity. A teacher in Hollis, I went to a presentation a while ago with Heather Gage on the stage, and she talked about how she's changing her teaching style because of what is coming from Common Core. So it's definitely affecting their pedagogy and the way that they teach in the classroom. And we've had teachers testify in front of the Manchester School Board. One of the teachers from Manchester testified that, you know, the math practices that go along with the standards certainly dictate pedagogy and dictate how they're going to teach in the classroom. So I think what, from a technical point of view, you can say that teachers have creativity, but when we're seeing it in action, that's not what we're seeing. That's not what we're seeing at all. And these tests are going to drive exactly what the teachers teach. That's going to drive the curriculum. And we're seeing that especially in states like New York, who are a year ahead of us.
And Mamrie, so, I'm going to jump in on you. I apologize there. I'm glad you called, because we will talk more about the test in just a moment, and specifically Manchester. We've got a teacher from Manchester who will join us. So keep it right here.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, 939. Good morning.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, inside America's debt collection industry, then 70 years after the liberation of Paris, daily life in the City of Light under German occupation, all coming up on the Diane Rehm Show.
This morning from 10 till noon on NHPR. Mostly cloudy, a chance of some showers this morning. Turning partly sunny, chance of showers and thunderstorms this afternoon. Highs upper 70s to around 80 degrees. Support for NHPR comes from you, our listeners, and support also comes to us from Dartmouth Hitchcock, creating a new model for healthcare, a sustainable system improving the health of our communities for generations to come. Imagine.d-h.org. It's 9:40. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, Alan Rabinowitz, an international expert on saving the world's big wild cats, comes to New Hampshire, and we'll talk with him tomorrow. Today in The Exchange, a look at the Common Core and how it's affecting New Hampshire classrooms and our students. You can join us, 1-800-892-6477. What have you seen so far with these standards in your own local schools? What do you hope happens next as these really go into place by 2015? Again, the number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. And all of you, lots of feedback from listeners is still coming in. But Andrew, I did want to go back to you for just a moment to Anne Marie's point. You know, she's saying, look, this is going to change the way teachers teach. These tests will make a difference in the day-to-day decisions of educators. We heard the same critique with No Child Left Behind, Andrew. Go ahead. I'd love your thoughts on Anne Marie's point. And Anne Marie, thank you for calling.
Well, I think both things are fair points. Just to focus on the tests for a second, to her point, there have been numerous states over the past several months, including Colorado, New Jersey, and New York, as she mentioned, that have in some way delayed or limited the initial impact of these Common Core aligned tests on teacher evaluations. So this is definitely a concern that many states have picked up on, especially over the last 6 months, I would say, as state legislatures have been in session. They are hearing concerns from teachers' unions and others about the impact of these tests. These state assessments, as you mentioned, with respect to No Child Left Behind, these state assessments in this general form are not new. They've been going on under No Child Left Behind. The difference is that, unlike at the start of No Child Left Behind, more states are using test scores to evaluate teachers. These tests are going to be more difficult. It's generally expected. So I think a combination of those things and other factors are making people more nervous about their impact, but it's not a completely new phenomenon that we're seeing.
And Heather, I know you want to jump in real quick there as well.
Right. In New Hampshire, we have a law in place that requires all educators be evaluated. However, what that evaluation looks like from district to district is their call. They develop that on their own in collaboration with teachers. Extremely important. With our flexibility waiver, our No Child Left Behind flexibility waiver, what we have done is that the statewide assessment for those schools that are receiving Title I funds from the federal government, that they use the statewide assessment as a consideration in their evaluation.
What does that mean, Title I funds?
I'm sorry. So there is a pot of money within the No Child Left Behind Act that is for schools to focus on those students that are struggling the most. And so several of our schools in New Hampshire receive those funds. And if they receive those funds, what we've asked for that is that when you're evaluating teachers, 20% of your evaluation should be on how students are performing, but the statewide assessment only has to be a consideration in that, because we're a multiple measurement state, if you will. The other states that were described are what is commonly referred to as high-stakes testing states. We don't have that in New Hampshire, not for our students and not for our educators.
I see, because teachers have felt, and Sam, correct me if I'm wrong, that it's unfair to tie their assessments so sharply to a student result on a test. You know, a child maybe is homeless or comes every day without eating breakfast, and, you know, it's not entirely the teacher's fault if he or she isn't learning.
Well, also consider the fact that these tests are only for English, language arts, and math. So how do you test an art, you know, how are you going to evaluate the performance of an art teacher based on standardized tests, or a music teacher? So districts are allowed to develop their own teacher evaluation systems in New Hampshire. 20% is supposed to be based on some sort of student growth metric. You know, it could be, but those could be assessments in the classroom that are done. They don't have to be a standardized test.
All right. Well, as we talk about teachers and how they're feeling and what they're going to do in the new school year, we go now to Manchester. Ben Dick is with us now. He's an English teacher at Memorial High School and also head of the Manchester Education Association. That's the local teachers union. And Ben, welcome back to The Exchange. Good to have you.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Well, how will you be teaching English differently than in years past? Give us some concrete examples, because we've been talking a lot about this.
It's hard to say right now. In Manchester, we're kind of doing our own thing, which is not new for us. We're developing Manchester academic standards, which are based in part on the Common Core standards, but allowed educators in the district to form their own standards or work together to form standards that kind of go beyond or go in a different direction from the Common Core. But as with any massive undertaking, we haven't finalized them yet. They are in the process of being finalized. So as a classroom educator, you know, taking off my union hat for a second, I'm still waiting.
Well, and school starts pretty soon, right? About 3 weeks?
It sure does. It does, but I think that the plan is that anytime you, again, you have something of this magnitude, the idea would be that you take some time to kind of feel it out. I mean, you know, nobody could expect to jump into something and be completely ready to go. So as we move forward, I believe the intent, and we started this in the spring somewhat, is to slowly get our feet wet and figure out how this is going to adjust the way we do things.
So, Ben,
it's going to take time.
You said Manchester's taking a different direction from Common Core. Can you describe just different in what way and how you as an English teacher feel about it?
It's not a complete change. What was decided was there was a lot of, as one of the earlier callers mentioned, there was a lot of concern, you know, at Manchester board meetings and whatnot, about simply adopting the Common Core. There were a lot of, you know, parent groups that came out in different areas. So what Manchester decided to do was create their own set of high standards, but recognized that that doesn't mean that Common Core doesn't offer things for us. And so they used Common Core as kind of a foundation and kind of a benchmark or a basis to start this new process. So as you look at the earlier grades, and I haven't read them all, but as you look at the earlier grades, you see a lot more of a similarity between the academic standards and the Common Core, more of that foundation. And then as they moved on into the upper grades, I think that's where you start to see some of the divergent paths, so to speak, where they've taken stuff and they've gone in a different direction.
And that matters for you because you're a high school teacher. Yeah, go ahead.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. One of the more common concerns that I've been hearing about Common Core from very early on is a focus on informational text versus literature, for example. And so speaking as an English teacher, one of the things I know they were very cognizant of was making sure that they included a reading list of literature and incorporating literature to kind of, you know, take care of some of that concern as we move forward, things of that nature. So as they got further into the schooling, as I said, they felt they had the ability to kind of address areas of common concern.
What are teachers saying, Ben, about this smarter, balanced test that you're supposed to be giving the students by next spring? Are you guys off the hook in terms of that because you're doing something different in Manchester? Or?
That is another very common discussion at the board meetings. I
bet.
I don't want to speak for anybody on the board or the mayor, but I know that the mayor mentioned that he'd had conversations about using a different form of testing. And I know that I haven't heard a ton statewide about the Smarter Balance yet. The one area I heard from was a school district that was piloting it, and they did agree with what, you know, some people said earlier this morning, that it does seem to be a bit more rigorous. And there's obviously concern anytime you hear talk about tying in evaluations to something of that nature. But because we are still kind of up in the air, I don't know. I really don't know what will be used in the spring.
All right. Well, like I said, don't have a lot of time, but good luck in the new academic year, Ben. Good to talk to you.
Thanks so much. Likewise.
All right. That's Ben Dick again. He's an English teacher in Manchester, teaching at the high school level at Memorial High. The phone number for you to join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Here's a Facebook comment that came in earlier from Kimberly that I'd love to get your feedback on. Maybe you, Andrew, and Sam. Kimberly says, the concerns are that the Common Core standards are lower than New Hampshire's existing standards. New Hampshire was recently rated as number 4 of all the states. Common Core lowers the standards and dumbs down our kids. Andrew, I've heard people in other states make the same complaint. What do you think?
Yeah, that's not an uncommon argument from some folks. There are some content standards experts who feel that the Common Core doesn't deliver on its main pledge, which is to make standards more rigorous for students. I think that a lot of people have focused on members of the Common Core Validation Committee, which consisted of about 30 people who were overseeing the standards development. There are folks such as Sandra Stotsky, who used to work on content standards for Massachusetts, who are especially critical of the standards' lower quality. So I do think that is a concern. It
somewhat depends on which state you're in. I think that there are different rankings of content standards depending on who you talk to, but that is something that you hear sometimes from folks who are concerned that the Common Core sort of whiffs on its number one aim.
Well, that's interesting. So why is that? Because, you know, as a layperson, Andrew, I don't know who to believe. I do hear a lot of people saying these dumb down the standards, like Kimberly. But then the whole goal of Common Core, as you said, is to raise the standards, require more rigor. So where's the truth? How do you figure that out?
Well, that's a good question. I think to some extent, it depends on, like many other public policy issues, it depends on who you trust. And who you ask and what you hear from teachers. And I believe that many teachers, if they have a negative view of the Common Core, feel that it asks too much of students. Again, maybe in states other than New Hampshire, that's the case. So I think it depends on each teacher's experience with the Common Core, and I think this is a critical point, to what extent they feel as if they've been adequately prepared for any major shifts they're undergoing to the Common Core. So it's a difficult question to answer, and at this point, because the debate has become so politicized, people sort of pick the experts who say essentially what they'd like to hear in many instances.
Sam, do you
want
to jump in
proceed
on that? Yeah.
Yeah, so for people who are hearing this, because you do hear this, you hear one side saying that the standards are too rigorous, you hear another side saying that they're dumbing down the old standards. I think that the standards will become real when students start to take the test. And if you talk to anyone who's taken the test, everyone who I've talked to said it's substantially harder.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, and
they field tested this earlier this year in New Hampshire,
well,
right?
Well, earlier this year and the year before, both pilots have taken place in schools in New Hampshire. And if you talk to the students who took the test, it's substantially harder than the old test. So I use that as my, you know, I'm not an expert in standards. I haven't gone line by line and compared every standard. But if you're going to use any sort of an easy benchmark, that seems to be the most objective one to me.
And was that the case, Sam? And I know you probably didn't have time to go to every town in the state, obviously, but was that the case that the kids found it harder in, you know, high-performing districts like Bow and you know, other districts that have had struggles, some of the Claremont districts, for example? I mean, was that the case everywhere?
So you're right. I did not go town by town. I did not talk to every student. I would say that the students who I have spoken to, generally when you go as a reporter to a school and ask to interview students, they provide you with very high-performing students. So the kids I was talking to were not dumb.
Yeah. Do you want to jump in, Heather?
Well, I just wanted to say that there was a study done before the Common Core was adopted across the country, and each state had their current standards at the time rated, if you will. And our standards were very, very low in the state of New Hampshire. But as the caller or the email mentioned, despite that, our students actually do well. So imagine how well they can do with what we, of course, consider higher standards. So we're looking forward to seeing the results of that.
Well, and Kimberly, thanks for the Facebook comment. And by the way, the conversation continues. Even after we get off the air, it continues on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange, all one word. So you can post your comments there like Kimberly did. Here's an email from Christina who says, thank you for a thoughtful and informative conversation about a topic that's complicated and misunderstood. Christina says, I teach second grade. Many parents are worried about the push for reading at earlier grades. She says it's not that big a shift in many ways compared to what it used to look like in our classroom. However, she says, the assessment is very different as SBAC, I think that's probably Smarter Balanced Assessment something, right, is an attempt to move to a performance process-oriented assessment with less recall and multiple choice than the NECAPS, that's the old New England Common Assessment Program, as my kids call it, the New England Child Abuse Program, but we won't go there now, was, as we as teachers are nervous about these tests way more than the standards. That's really interesting, Andrew. So she's fine with the standards, but she's got a lot of worries about these tests.
Yes, and again, I think that's a concern that many teachers across the country feel, which is in part what I think led to the actions that I described earlier in terms of state lawmakers, who many of whom have shown an appetite for evaluating teachers based in part on tests. Now they're saying, well, we want to make sure that teachers sort of can sort of phase in terms of how they're judged on these tests and that it won't hit them all at once in 2014, 15. And I think that's something that the general public is going to be exposed to in the spring and summer of 2015 when these test scores come back. Many members of the public, despite all of the conversation around Common Core, I think many of them are still going to be surprised and in many cases angry about the drops in overall proficiency levels and how students are doing. The question is to what extent states can sort of tell parents and explain to them adequately, okay, it looks bad, right? But here's why, and here's why it's important over the long haul. And I think at that point in many states it will become a question of political will and to what extent states can stick by them despite some outcry about the scores.
Yeah, go ahead, Heather.
So just 2 points. One, Andrew, you're absolutely right. When it comes to the next assessment, there is a perception that scores will drop. What's really important to recognize, though, is that these are different standards, and it's a completely different assessment. So we want to make sure that that's very clear. We'll be getting out information for schools to use with parents about that from the department. But it's also our responsibility as educators and education policymakers to understand if students are mastering content. And in New Hampshire, we believe, like I said before, in multiple measures. The statewide assessment is just one of those measures.
All right. Well, all of you, I think we're going to need to do a couple more shows on this, especially as those tests become reality. Andrew, thank you very much for your time. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Andrew Ujifusa, he covers state education policy for Education Week, a national publication. Sam Evans-Brown, thank you for being here.
It's been a pleasure.
Sam Evans-Brown, education reporter for us here at NHPR. And Heather Gage, good to have you. Thank you for your time.
It's been a pleasure, Laura.
Heather Gage, director of the Division of Educational Improvement from the New Hampshire Department of Education. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. The engineer is Dan Colgan. The senior producer is Ellen Grimm. Our producer is Faith Meixel. Our volunteer is Alan Cohen. Our intern is James Pouliot. Theme music was composed by Bob Lord, and I'm Laura Kanoi.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
I'm Laura Kanoi, and tomorrow on The Exchange, saving the world's wild cats. Although at the top of the food chain, tigers, jaguars, mountain lions, and others known as apex predators face threats as varied as poachers, habitat destruction, and climate change. We'll sit down with a leading expert to talk about this, how his efforts tie into a broader conservation movement, and the big cats in our own backyards. Send us your thoughts by email or Facebook, and join us for The Exchange tomorrow morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. on NHPR.
The Diane Rehm Show next at 10 o'clock on New Hampshire Public Radio. Mostly cloudy, chance of some showers this morning, then turning partly sunny with a chance of showers and thunderstorms this afternoon. Highs today from upper 70s to around 80 degrees. Partly cloudy tonight. Lows from upper 40s north, ranging upper 50s south. Support for NHPR comes from you, our listeners, and from GoShopNH.com, a Granite State online retailer of locally made products, helping you support your neighbors and buy local. GoShopNH.com.
These are the stations of New Hampshire Public Radio.
WEVO, Concord, 89.1.
WEVS, Nashua, 88.3.
WEVH, Hanover, 91.3.
WEVN, Keene, 90.7.
WEVC, Gorham, 107.1.
WEVJ, Jackson, 99.5.
WEVF, Colebrook, 90.3.
And WEVQ, Littleton, 91.9.
And online at nhpr.org.
From WAMU and NPR in Washington, I'm Diane Rehm. A new study says more than 35% of Americans have debt that's been reported to a collections agency. Even as credit card debt continues to decline, the percentage of Americans facing collectors' calls has not budged. The U.S. Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is taking a hard look at the collections industry and is poised to issue game-changing regulations. There are allegations that debt collections claims are frequently incorrect or improperly managed. Firms that file lawsuits to collect money on unpaid bills are now in the hot seat. Inside America's evolving debt collection industry, first the news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Korva Coleman. In northern Iraq, tens of thousands of religious minority Yazidis are stranded in the mountains and besieged by the radical group, the Islamic State. NPR's Allison Muse reports that 70 children are said to have died from violence and dehydration.
People are dying of thirst in the barren mountains of Sinjar. UNICEF says up to 25,000 children are stranded in multiple locations without food or water. Hussam Salim, who has a local Yazidi NGO, says the Islamic State is blocking all land routes. He says the Iraqi army tried to airlift supplies to the minority community, but the militants attacked the helicopters with anti-aircraft weapons. Meanwhile, the Islamic State is publishing gruesome photos of its conquest of nearby Yazidi villages. One shows more than a dozen men lying face down as a gunman takes aim. It reads, "If you meet the non-believers, smite them in the neck." Allison Muse, NPR News, Beirut.
Israeli and Palestinian representatives are in Cairo for Egyptian-sponsored truce talks. These are intended to reach a more durable ceasefire. Both sides are in the middle of a three-day truce that continues to hold. Mutual areas of agreement may be hard to reach. The Palestinian militant group Hamas rejects Israel's existence and has vowed to destroy it. Israel and the U.S. have declared Hamas a terror organization. Israel targeted Hamas